The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from National Geographic Traveler, and if time permits, maybe a look at an article in AAA Go magazine. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Now, as you may recall, Armchair Traveler is featuring articles during September that focus on what we may hear during our travels. Most of the time we talk about what we see, but these focus more on what we hear. And the articles mostly come from the August-September 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler. And on today's Armchair Traveler, we go in search for perfect harmony, which lures an American musician to a timeless and untamable Mediterranean island. The artist, writer, and guide is rapper Dessa, and the island of destination is Corsica. Ready to begin? Here we go. A beautiful singing voice is alchemic. You pull a lungful of air through the human machine, and it leaves like magic as music on the exhale. I'm a singer, so probably biased, but I don't believe we've managed to design an instrument that rivals the reed we've got built in. I was first introduced to the vocal group, A Falletta, by a listener at one of my own concerts, a poorly attended show in Germany. To distract the crowd from its own size, my bandmate, Abby, and I crammed everyone into a stairwell, then sang Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah in Harmony, a cappella. Afterward, I received an email from a man named Christian. In a very, very quiet moment, please watch this. A link led to a video in which a man wearing a gold chain and a black dress shirt, open at the collar, held a tuning fork to his right ear before dropping it into his breast pocket. Gray-haired and trim, he moved with a relaxed animal athleticism. When his mouth opened, his eyes shut, as if wired on a shared circuit. The sound, he admitted, matched his physical aspect. It was a boxer's voice, abraded by time or suffering, or both. The melody was both mournful and urgent, like a funeral song for someone not quite dead. It featured the tense, fast vocal trills of tragic Portuguese fado, or a mezzanine's call to prayer. After the first phrase, a half-dozen other male voices joined in. The camera panned across their faces, dark lashes edging their closed eyes. Some sang in close harmony, some sang long vowels like a bed of strings. I couldn't understand the words, couldn't even identify the language, but I knew I'd never seen such an undisguised passion in the faces of singers making such a religious sound. This was not a church pew prayer. This was a bathroom floor prayer. I played it again and again. Googling, I learned A Falletta is from Corsica, a Mediterranean island territory of France. The group's charismatic leader is Jean-Claude Acquaviva. I checked the band website, hoping to find U.S. tour dates. Nothing. I checked again next summer. No luck. 5 years later, I was still checking, and then found that to celebrate the band's 40th anniversary, a concert would be performed in the Corsican capital of Ajaccio. I bought a plane ticket. Maps can't tell you the truth about Corsica. From above, it looks like any other island, a patch of green against the blue. But Corsica is first and foremost a mountain. Sheer cliffs rise from the surface of the Mediterranean as if it's just cut away out of the sea. The truth of the place is visible only in profile. I arrive in Ajaccio in a few days before the show with plans to meet a Corsican filmmaker named Nico de Susini, the friend of a cousin of a friend who graciously agreed to orient me to the island. Nico is tall and lean, with silver curls, a French accent, and almost always a cigarette, lit or unlit, in his right hand. "We're like an old place. Everybody smoke here," he says. Over beers in a little bar, Nico introduces me to the culture. respect, it is the first and most important word in our parents' mouths. As in Sicily, Nico says, traditional family values prevail. Toddling Corsicans are instructed to respect mothers, fathers, siblings, neighbors, the elderly. When we cross the road with old people in the street, we take the bags. He stresses that Corsicans cannot be understood as islanders or fisher folk. We come, all of us, from the mountain. The cigarette gestures inland. They may work on the coast, but all have ties to a family village in the interior. Historically, the mountain also provided a strategic position from which to defend against invasion. The island's geographical position made it a tempting conquest. Although it's been a region of France for more than 200 years, most residents seem to consider it more like an occupied territory, misunderstood and mistreated by federal powers. Corsican pride is untamable. Corsican's allegiance is their own flag, their own traditions, their own mountain. You can leash a wolf to a stake in the yard, but it's nobody's pet. The proprietor sets down a plate of bread and meat. Corsicans are uncompromising about food, cheese and meat in particular. Earlier that day at restaurant Le Don Quixote, I marveled at ribbons of pancetta shaved so fine that I could read the newspaper through them. The medallion of warm chevre on my toast was so flavorful and so yielding. I wasn't even sure it was cheese. The restaurant's chalkboard menu listed the name of the shepherdess who supplied it, and I spent a few minutes admiring online photos of Johanna, a goat kid in her arms. Two men enter the bar and join the conversation, one a Corsican language teacher, the other a professor of philosophy. In fast French, Nico explains the American is a writer and musician here to see a falletta. Both seem surprised a traveler would come so far who would be familiar with Corsican music. I get a round of approving nods. The Corsican teacher asks if I know what a falletta means, and I do not. The fern, he says. There is a story, but the details escape him, and the conversation proves difficult to translate. I nod, pretending to understand more than I do, and to make a note to look it up. In the days before the concert, I do what tourists do. I walk through the Plaza Foch, the open-air market where vendors are selling hanging sausages, nuts, and small jars of candied fruit that shine like oil gemstones. Corsican fare relies on simple combinations of local, fresh ingredients, citrus pulled from trees in the garden, olive oil pressed from local groves, and embotellado, a soft white cheese made from the milk of goats or sheep. But if the Corsican dinner table had a protagonist, it would be the chestnut. It's ground into flour for sweet canestrelli biscuits, turned into paste to spread on fresh bread, made into liqueur, baked into a savory polenta-like pudding, and enthusiastically consumed not only by the human residents of the island, but also by sangliers, semi-wild boars whose meat is flavored by their predilection for the nut. I buy two jars of honey. Tapping one of the lids, the vendor says, "Strong." When I sample it, I let out an involuntary, "Whoa!" surprised by a completely unhoney-like bite. Instead of a round sweetness, this honey came armed with a sharp, astringent note of Marmite? Makeup remover? Even before I can properly decide if I like it or not, I help myself to a generous second serving. I take late afternoon bus to Ponte de la Parata to see Isles Sanguinaires, the bloody islands of red rock just off the coast. Gravel crunches beneath my work boots on the path up. The view of the top is a postcard in every direction. The clouds are sun-roasted and the islands stark against the pastel wash of sea and sky. The pink light doesn't seem to hit the rock but feels attached to the air somehow, like vaporized rosé. I visit the little resort town of Porticcio, a 20-minute ferry ride away, to meet a cutler who has agreed to show me his workshop and explain the tradition of Corsican knives. Simon Cicaldi is sinewy and handsome, with a quick laugh that he uses like mortar to fill holes in conversations. Standing in his one-room storefront, he explains that the Corsican knife began as a shepherd's tool. A herdsman would bring a horn from one of the animals to be fashioned into a handle and fitted with a blade. More recently, however, the Vendetta knife has captured the imaginations of Corsica's visitors, a dagger purportedly used to settle feuds on the island, though that account might have more marketing appeal than really historical veracity. The knives are displayed like jewelry, propped up in flattering postures. Some blades feature fine stripes of alternating black and silver in liquid patterns. Damascus steel, Simon explains, has been heated and folded many times, forming hundreds of tight layers. I watched his hands as he gestures. The right palm is traversed with a thin white line across the meat of his thumb. When I asked about it, he traces a finger down the scar and confirms it's the product of a rare, careless moment with one of his own blades. We enter the workshop behind the store, walking past sanding belts, blade templates, and a machinery that cuts steel with a jet of water. Blocks of ebony, oak, boxwood, and walnut sit on shelves, waiting to become handles. We follow the sound of metal clanging to the forge where a man, backlit by fire, is battering a knife into existence. The night of the concert, I trudge uphill in the dark toward the venue printed on my ticket, La Asha. I'm eager to see what sort of Corsican will be in attendance, old people who remember the band as a soundtrack to their youth, young families, hipsters. The sign for La Asha comes into view, and my heart seizes. The windows are dark, the parking lot empty. A poster of Affoletta, elegant in their concert blacks, has been plastered over with a piece of printer paper in French words I don't know. I check the time, 30 minutes until concert begins, and this sign, I would wager, announces a change of venue. I've been waiting to see this band for 7 years. I've traveled around the world, and the thought of missing it makes me sick with panic. Across the street, I see a man and three women walking briskly. In manic, awful French, I shout, "Hello, I'm sorry, do you speak English?" The man turns as I sprint toward him, backpack bouncing. I think, I would never talk to a stranger behaving the way I am right now. Luckily, the man is more generous with agitated strangers than I am. His name is Matthew Bertrand Bertarini. Within a minute, I'm in the back seat of a little red car, all of us heading to see Affoletta. Had the concert been moved to a larger venue? Was the ticket just misleading? It's unclear, but relief snuffs out my curiosity as we drive away, as all Corsicans do, very fast. We find our seats beside one another in the darkness of the new venue, a black box with the stage elevated a few feet off the floor, and folding chairs aligned in tight rows. Haze wafts through the ray of the spotlight. Jean-Claude takes the stage and welcomes the crowd, which eagerly responds. When the music begins, the basses resonate in such low registers, it seems impossible such sounds could issue from the body of a man built to normal scale. Jean-Claude delivers the melody in his fingers' timbre, flanked by tenors who sing harmonies so clear and sweet by they almost hurt to hear. Just as in the video, the singers cup a hand around one ear to better discern their own voices in the title swell. They stagger their breathing so that long notes have unbroken. I find it hard to imagine that someone writing these songs in the same way it is difficult to imagine someone inventing the bowl or the door. They seem so elemental, more a feature in the natural world than designed. Between songs, Jean-Claude talks about freedom and recent political events. When the group formed in the late 70s, it was born out of a movement for social and political resistance. Matthew leans over to translate when he can, but even without the exposition, the melodies are decipherable. There is love and loss and inextinguishable longing. Matthew and I agree that the best are the a cappella songs. When I hear Matthew sniffling beside me, I don't bother drying my own cheeks. I let the song dissolve the ceiling and turn the square black room into a vaulted cathedral. Jean-Claude and his men take hold of one another's forearms to raise their voices together, lifting and darting like birds, then diving into sudden decrescendo that ends the song by guillotine. I leave Corsica the way that everyone does, be it visitor, resident, or rebuffed invader, with plans to return. when I look it back up, look it up back at home, I learn Ophelata is named for a Corsican fern. The root structures grow horizontally, making the plant exceedingly difficult to pull or displace. No matter what army might roll in or whose flag they unfurl, the fern is resolute. It will not be moved. I realize how fitting it is that the songs of Corsica, anthems of a robust, defiant cultural identity, should be performed by the human voice. It is the only instrument inseparable from its player, rooted firmly in the body from which it cannot be removed without a fight. Well, our guide, Dessa, is a rapper, singer, and author of the book My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science, and Senseless Love. And you can learn more about Dessa, and here's the website, DessaWander.com. And that is Dessa, D-E-S-S-A, DessaWander.com. Accompanying his article are some travel-wise tips for visits to Ajaccio in Corsica. And let me give you some of those. Where to stay, for example. The Hotel Napoleon is a clean and modest spot centrally located in Ajaccio. Look for the metal container labeled Ambronera by the front desk and help yourself to some honey-colored nugget of fragrant amber. And we move on to where to eat and drink. Corsicans eat local and fresh. Trust the recommendations of your server. And survey neighboring tables to see what the regulars are ordering. Bakeries are plentiful and tempting. Beignets à brochure are sugared pastries with a bite of soft white cheese at the center. And the mild canestrelli biscuits are made from chestnut flour, sometimes flavored with white wine or chocolate. If you like a limoncello, look for homemade fare in the unlabeled bottles. The local myrtle and maquet plants are also made into sweet liqueurs. In Ajaccio, take an evening, rather. Walk down the Rue de Roma, a few blocks lined with eateries, bars, and smoking Corsicans. Celebrated restaurant, Le 2123, is named after a village postcode. Next door at El Diciembre, male singers sometimes gather to sing Corsican songs in masterful harmony, accompanying themselves with guitar and reading lyrics from iPhones. If you're indulging with friends, Bar Avine 1755 is the spot for late-night, high-calorie tapas to be shared by the table. So there you go. A lot of fun in an island called Corsica. Also appearing in the August-September 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler is the City Guide, with writer and editor Nori Quintos offering us a snapshot tour of Quito, Ecuador. As the lead-in photo caption states, why go now? Well, boutique hotels and Nova Andean cuisine reaching new heights in Ecuador's capital. Let's learn more. Wedged into the folds of the Andes, the world's second-highest capital city, surpassed only by La Paz, Bolivia, contains the best-preserved Spanish colonial core in the Americas. Despite this, travelers tend to overlook Quito as they make their way to the country's Pacific Islands treasure, the Galapagos. But times are changing, and this city of 2 million is having a moment. A burgeoning food scene, new boutique hotels, and a subway slated to open by year's end are encouraging visitors to explore this modern city with an ancient soul. Quito is best understood as a collection of diverse neighborhoods united under a volcano, says Jorge Vinuesa of Ecuadorian travel magazine NAN. These elements give it a unique energy that you only have to walk in the streets to feel. The city's UNESCO-designated center is a rabbit hole of riches, but don't stop there. Take the Teleférico to the top of the volcano, stock up on textiles at the artisanal market, and on weekends, make like Quitinos and head out of town. So let's see what else Nori offers us as she covers Quito in quick fashion, what to know, what to eat, and what to see. And in the Know It column, here's what she's got for us. La Floresta, a barrio with everything essential. Coffee, culture, and kissimmees. That's gossip. A hacienda estate until the early 1900s, this wildflowered area was one of the first neighborhoods to emerge as the city expanded beyond its colonial borders between the world wars. There are ornate Italianate mansions, low-slung early modernist houses, and high-rise apartment buildings. Artists and creatives began moving in some 20 years ago to give it the alternative indie vibe it has today. The first inhabitants of La Floresta brought with them the spirit of the historic center, the panderias, the cafeterias, the lavanderias, the sastreferias, what we call officios or trades, says Vinuesa. Along with some more recent graffiti artists, musicians, and filmmakers, it gives you the barrios its aliveness. You don't need an elaborate plan, just wander. You might decide to take in an art film at the pioneering Ocho Medio Theater or Medeo Theater, or visit the offices of travel magazine Non to purchase some authentic souvenirs staff picked up during their sojourns throughout the country. Scoop up designer-made decor from Libertina Tienda Galleria, or sample superfoods like quinoa or vegano de Arturo and chocolate at Jorge Verde. Time for an un cafecito, black coffee? Well, head to Gervas or Botanica for a free guided stroll of the neighborhood. Check out the Quito Street Tours. They also have some rooms to check out, and these are under the category of trendy, new, and classic. In the trendy category, Le Parc Hotel, the sleek spot in New Quito's Banacazar neighborhood, is walking distance to Creperies. Cafes and high-end shopping, as well as La Carolina, the city's version of Central Park, ideal for strolling and jogging. Well-appointed rooms feature mid-century modern furniture. Now, in the new category, it's Hotel Mama Cochara. One of the city's newest boutique hotels grew out of an old house in the traditional working hood of La Loma Grande, near the many of the sites in the historic center. The house once harbored conspirators of the 1875 assassination of President Gabriel Garcia Moreno. Now remodelers have reversed years of neglect and incorporated contemporary architecture to create a structure that evokes history without replicating it. Ecuadorian art adorns the rooms, and the restaurant's menu changes daily to highlight dishes from different provinces. And in the classic category, we have the Casa Gangochena, with its prime location on Plaza del San Francisco, the heart of the historic district, or quarter. This is undoubtedly the best address in the city. The former palace home of presidents and landowners was rebuilt Art Nouveau style with Art Deco touches and eventually turned into a 31-room hotel. Don't miss the rooftop terraces for unfettered views of Old Town. Now, what about to eat? Well, in that category, we have Buen Provecho, four ways to eat well, from street food to Novandian. In the Cafe Society category, Quiteños drink coffee all day long and don't even think about ordering decaf. Try the cafeterias in Plaza Grande for people watching. Serious coffee lovers should head to Café Gallete Teatro Bolivar, a family-run business that works with small fincas. To warm up on chilly nights, select one of the three popular hot drinks, Canelazo, made with sugarcane alcohol, Vino Hervido, mulled wine, or chocolate con queso, yes, with cheese. Sip them with dazzling city views at Pim's, Panachilo, or Café Mosaico. And then we get into the getting creative category, and long overshadowed by Lima, Quito's food scene is now making headway. Inventive chefs such as Alejandro Camaro of Nuema are elevating Novo Andean cuisine using products of coast, sierra, and jungle, and reinterpreting indigenous and Spanish colonial traditions. At Chope, Carlos Saltos dishes out fresh takes on street food in a small house in the residential Las Casas neighborhood. Don't miss the pairing menu at Quito, Chef Juan Sebastian Perez's altar to Ecuadorian gastronomy. Then we have the street scene category. For a dollar or two, you can feast like a king on Ecuador's comida callejera, or street food. Different areas have their own specialties, so make like a local and nosh on tripa mesque, chewy but flavorful tripe, at outside stalls in La Vicentina, and quesadillas, more of a pastry, nothing like the Mexican dish, in San Juan. Candies from Las Colinas de la Cruz Verde. Try the so-called caca de perro, dog poop. Ooh. And cookies made like the Carmelite nuns at the Carmen Alto Convent in the historic center. And then we have a fourth category called hot cocoa. Chocolate may well have originated in the Ecuadorian Amazon, but only in recent years have homegrown chocolate companies refined and developed the raw product. The most well-known of them, Bacari, offers a two-hour mini-course in its historic downtown store that includes making and packaging your own organic truffles. Other chocolate houses worth visiting, Republica del Coco, and Chez Tiff, Hoja Verde, and Fair Trade Shop Tienguez, located near San Francisco Church. And we move on to what to see in Quito. In the High Points, explore a city of historic splendor and a region of natural wonder. In the fine arts category, Quito has marvelous museums, including the Museo de la Ciudad and the Museo Nacional de Banco Central. But don't overlook these two under-the-radar gems, the Caseo de la Alabeto, showcases the surprising and sophisticated workmanship of pre-Columbian art within an elegant Spanish colonial house. And then there's Casa Museo Guillasamin, displays paintings and murals at the home of Ecuador's most famous 20th century artist, Oswaldo Guillasamin. And then we have the fresh air category. Now, despite its notoriously fickle weather, keep a rain jacket in your pack as you go. Quito often sees the sun, and after you've acclimatized, I should say, to the altitude, take the teleférico up to the city's volcano, Rucupichincha, for a look around beloved by locals locally located. Parque La Carolina has running trails, a man-made lake, and the orchid-filled botanical gardens. On Sundays, rent a bike and cruise Quito north to south on roads closed to traffic for the weekly Cecilio Paseo. And then we have the divine sights. It could take weeks to see all of the city's churches. If there were a people's choice, it would be San Francisco Church and Plaza, its winged Virgin of Quito statue above the altar, replicated by gigantic proportions on Panecillo Hill. But there's also the gleaming gold-leafed plated interior of La Campanilla, built by the Jesuits in Baroque style. If you don't fear heights, scale one of the towers of the Basilica del Voto Nacional for heavenly vistas. And then there's the out-of-town category. All of the volcanoes and lakes within a 60-mile radius encourage weekend jaunts. North of Quito is the world-famous Otavio Market. Stay at the new Otavio Hotel and arrange a guide for the textile and music workshops. South of Quito, adventurers can climb the majestic and active Cotopaxi volcano, or take in the views from the horseback at the Hacienda El Porvenir, Baños at the base of another volcano, and then there's Tungurahua, known for its thermal springs. Tungurahua. And a final column here is called Walk the Line, and it is subtitled Ecuador's Equatorial Encounters. The French-led Condamine expedition famously mapped the line between the northern and southern hemispheres just 14 miles north of Quito, and visiting the official site, La Mitad del Mundo, is a popular excursion. A massive monument and a bright yellow stripe of demarcation make for cool snaps straddling the line, so you can actually stand in both hemispheres and take a selfie. How about that? Now, there is a problem. It's the 18th century explorers were about 800 feet off the mark, so to speak. And to get closer, you'll have to go to the nearby Intuan Solar Museum, a hokey attraction with mock physics experiments. And for the most accurate GPS readings and scientific explanations, you head to Quisato near Cayambe, a site of a larger solar rock and the best place to appreciate the gravity of where you're standing. Wow, what a treat, huh? Talk about a visit. Quito, Ecuador. So if you're looking for something different, that's the place to go, I guess. Well, that brings us to the end of today's journey on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it, that you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.